Okay, what I think one of the most difficult parts of getting ready for Pesach is not making fun of other people that do more than you. The other stuff is easy. Listen, there's different types of difficulty, but think about that next time someone tells you something you never heard of, and the first thing that comes either out of your mouth or goes into your head is, that's stupid, and where are they making this up, and these chumrot, and where they're coming from, and so on and so forth. Am I wrong about this? Okay. So before we make fun of other people, there are certain things I want you to see. And I entitled this today, Halacha Minhag V'Chumra. Although, I don't know how much I'll talk about any of those. But I'll try. More sources are coming. Now, uniquely on Pesach, for some reason, and we'll get to some of those reasons, the idea of being strict or stringent has seeped into our collective consciousness more so than many other areas. And you know, I remarked back a couple of months ago where with a comparison between the laws of Shabbat and the laws of Avelut, when it comes to Shabbat, we're dealing with Torah laws and you're dealing with things which sometimes are punishable by death. You have people looking for every kula they can find, including the Dud Shemesh, which maybe I'll still go back to this year. But when it comes to things like Avelut, which are not based upon the Torah, they're not based on the Rabbanan, sometimes you even have Minhagim, then people are not willing to be lenient on anything. When it comes to Pesach, people are incredibly strict on certain things, and we're going to see where that comes from. But let's start with source number one, which is a Gemara in Brachot, which has nothing to do with Pesach, certainly not with Pesach at first glance. The Gemara says, Ha'arav hamnuna matzli la, v'rav chalzendi batar de matzli amar hachi. This Gemara is giving a list of different private tefillot that different Tanaim or Amorim said. In this case, Amoraim. They said their own special tefillot. Some of those special tefillot you've become accustomed to because they made it their way into the Sidur in one place or another. But what was the special tefillah that Rav Hamnuna prayed and Rav Alexandri would say at the end of his tefillah, Batar Dematzli, after he prayed, he said as follows, Ribon Ha'olamim, Master of all worlds, Galui v'yadu l'fanecha, it's clear and known to you, sheritzoneinu la'asot ritzoncha, that it's our will to fulfill your will. Umima akev, but what holds us back? So'or shevi'isa, the chametzing agent in the dough is what holds us back. So'or shevi'isa, right? So'or b'isha, uvishibun malchiot, and also the oppression that we have from those who rule us. May it be your will that you save us from their hands, and that we can return and fulfill your commandments with a full heart. In this Gemara, and let's just look at Rashi for the moment, Rashi in source 2, Mima Akev, She'enon Osir Ritzoncha, what prevents us from doing your will? So'or Shebi'isa. Rashi explains, Zietzer harashe belibenu hamach mitzenu, which causes things to go wrong. Which means, over here, the Gemara, certainly with Rashi's help, but it's the meaning of the Gemara as well, that what prevents us from fulfilling God's will, it's the Yetzer hara, but what is the metaphor of the Yetzer hara? The metaphor is the yeast or the chametz. Because of this Gemara, Pesach became transformed from simply doing what God told us to do, and that is to give chametz a rest, as we saw last week, to disassociate ourselves from the chametz, into turning chametz into something which is evil. By the way, if this is the case, then we should have this attitude towards chametz all year round. If it's Yetzer Hara, so that fattening cake is always the Yetzer Hara. It's not just on Pesach and bread and so on and so forth. And it's a little difficult to say this, especially when one finds that by Chag HaShavuot there's the Shtei Halechem. So if that's the Yetzer Hara, then why are we suddenly using it? So something is going on over here, and the Ba'alei HaMachshava are going to have to deal with this issue. Why on Pesach chametz is not allowed, and then why on other times of the year it is allowed. And if it is associated with the Yetzer Hara, so then what's going on? Now, I could say that all year round we're not as sensitive, and it's always the Yetzer Hara, but we're allowed. We're allowed to give certain concessions to the Yetzer Hara all year round. But Pesach is the time that we come and we search and destroy, and we try to get rid of the Yetzer Hara, and it's part of a process which then frees us and allows us to get to Matan Torah. And as I said, with various variations, you can find all kinds of people who are going to say things like this. But this has had an enormous impact, because instead of getting rid of the chametz, which could have been, or maybe should have been, or maybe for some of us it is, more of a mechanical process, you have chametz, you get rid of your chametz, and now you're done. Instead, it becomes not just mechanical, but it becomes theological, whereby the getting rid of the chametz is something which is much, much stronger. Now, I didn't include all the sources that one can find on this, but you do find in certain sources, and I'll say Hasidic sources, but the truth is that some of them, they go much further back. But a more recent formulation, which is like the last 300 years or so, would be that whoever succeeds in getting rid of the chametz, they, on Pesach, will have succeeded in getting rid of the Yetzer Hara all year. Now, that gives one great motivation. Whether one can test this, if this actually works or not, that's another question. But now at least you understand the attitude. The attitude is, no, this is something else. Last week I mentioned something else. I mentioned a point that shouldn't be really debatable, and that is that crumbs are not chametz. In order to really understand this point, there's two problems with chametz. One problem with chametz is eating it. The other problem with chametz is owning it. It says lo yireh, you're right, but it means owning it. So owning it and eating it are two different problems. Eating it is a problem of eating one crumb. Owning it, it's only if there is a significant amount in one place. Now, the truth is, therefore, you clean up your house and you're done, which really means, as far as the floors go, it's probably no different than most of you do for Shabbat anyway. Doesn't have to be more than that. Taking a blowtorch to the floor or going with a pin between the cracks, all this is completely unnecessary as far as the halakha goes, because anything which is left there is not chametz. What is it? It's dirt. It's dirt which may have once been chametz, but it's still dirt. And, even when we own chametz, what do we say? We say, let our chametz be like the dust of the earth. That's the dust of the earth already. That's not significant. But if you look at it, not in terms of the halakha, but in terms of the theology, then suddenly, even that slightest piece of dirt that was once chametz, that may be something which now you want to get rid of. Now, is this a silly superstition? Is this a chumrah? Is this halacha? And what should we do on the one hand, and what should our attitude be to others on the other hand? So we do find a very interesting turn of phrase, which we'll see will come up again and again in today's sources. And that is, we'll look at the Rush, who's certainly not the first one to use it, but it's one of the earlier sources that I'm quoting today. And he writes in source number 3, if somebody wants to look by the photocopy machine, I assume that the rest are finished. I asked someone to bring them in, but they didn't. Does anyone know where the photocopy machine is? Okay, keep going. The Rush over here is in Masechet Pesachim. He is dealing with the problem of getting rid of chametz. And he writes in the beginning, "V'lo herachti l'ver divrei Rabbi." He goes, and I didn't go at length to explain this position, and I'm skipping a little bit because I'm getting a little bit out of context. He writes, "L'fi sheYisrael kidoshim heim." Jews are holy people, and because Jews are holy people, "V'gorin u'miva'arin kol chametz hanimtza afilu kol shehu." Afilu nidbak bikotlei habayit. That because Jews are holy, what do? They get rid of all of their chametz. They even get rid of, and again, kol shehu means what? Anything. What does anything mean? It's opposed to something else. What? It's opposed to kezayit. It's opposed to kebetza. It's opposed to some kind of significant shear. Kol shehu means anything. Jews get rid of everything. But why does he say this? Does he say this because Pesach is the holiday for obsessive compulsive people? No, that's not what he says. Look, everyone needs their own holiday. But what does he say instead? He says, Yisrael kedoshim hem, the Jews are holy. And by the way, for us, this is very important. Because this means that a person who, if they were behaving this way all year round, what do you say about them? That they're obsessive compulsive. But if they're doing this on Pesach, what does he say about them? Yisrael kedoshim hem. Okay, that's your homework to work on this. I just said attitude. Attitude towards people that do this to say, Yisrael kedoshim hem. Well, even though they're going beyond what the halacha requires of them, even though they're being machmir beyond what you would expect, he says this is a manifestation of Yisrael kedoshim hem. And therefore, what do? Even something which is on the walls, which means then that they will end up painting the walls or scraping what's on the walls. Excuse me?
I think
let's not say Lashon Hara anybody. What should he be saying now? Yisrael Kedoshim.
It was a custom in Yerushalayim, but
absolutely, absolutely. And now you see what? Now you see who said it. It goes all the way back to the Rosh, who, by the way, brings a source from the Yerushalmi. A source from the Yerushalmi, that's not so bad, because he just took that idea all the way back to the Gemara, that they would clean the walls, which he quotes there at the end, which I'm not bothering with. Source number four, which could be a very interesting source to you, because this is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Who's the Rav? The Rav is the Balatanya. The Balatanya is the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. His name was Schneer Zalman from Liadi, and his children took the name Schneer's son, which is why the family name became Schneer's son. Okay? It was worth coming to class just for that. Right? Okay. But his name was not Schneer's son. His name was Schneer. Okay. And the name Schneer comes because there was a kid who was born and there was a fight what to name the kid. I don't remember the exact name. One was Mayor. One, I think the father or the grandfather of the father and of the mother. One's name was Mayor and one's name was something else like Mayor, but I forgot what it was right now. And they ended up naming Schneer, Schneor, from two lights. Because let's say one was Yair and one was Mayor. So which one? So the compromise was Schneor, and he got the name from both lights. Okay, so now you know far more than you wanted to know. He died in 1812, 1813, as he was being chased by Napoleon. That's a true story, not because he had given orders to his followers to help the Tsar against Napoleon, even though the Tsar had put him in prison a couple of times. But he thought that Napoleon, who was promising to give the Jews freedom, posed more of a threat to Jewish continuity than the Tsar. Which means your known enemy is better than your unknown enemy, especially when your unknown enemy says, we're going to let you out of the ghetto, and he thought that was much worse. And Napoleon found out about it, and he had his army chasing him down, and he got sick, he had the flu, and he eventually died when he was on the lam. He writes, and by the way, his Shulchan Aruch is an incredible book. The Bala Tanya, because the Tanya is such a central book in Hasidus, his halacha book that he wrote is probably somewhat underrated, and it's just a phenomenal halachic book. The other thing about the book is, on very rare occasions, would you actually find mystical or Hasidic theology within the book. He separated it. He also wrote a siddur, and in his siddur, he wrote instructions for Hasidim. In his Shulchan Aruch, he wrote for all of Am Yisrael. At one point, I was tempted, and I started working on, but I never finished this, one of the professors in Bar Ilan was trying to convince me to write a doctorate on this book. So I studied a bit about it, but I stopped at some point. Let's look what he writes here. He writes, and forget what he said beforehand, because the context, again, doesn't make that much of a difference for us. You'll understand in a minute. V'kolzem ikar hadin. All this is regarding what halacha is. Aval Yisro Kadoshim Haim, Vinogin Lachmir Atzmo, Vigorin Kol Hachamit and Tsafilu Mashu. Now, if you read this by itself, you would think, well, this is just some Again, this is the Hasidic source. By the way, if I'm not mistaken, he was the one who said that if you get rid of all your chametz, you won't sin all year, because the Yetzer Hara would have been destroyed. That he doesn't write over here. But he is quoting the Rosh, you see, almost verbatim, and he includes this thing of Yisrael Kedoshim. And he writes, V'hu davuk bebayit, o bekli, o machmim, o legror hasaf salim, v'kisaot, v'katalim, shenagab em chametz. Anything that touched chametz, they would scrape off. V'im yesh chametz besedek, shenuchel lechater acharav, yetiach alav ma'atit. That if you can't do it, then you're going to plaster to cover up the chametz, which may have touched maybe someplace inside the wall over there. Source number five, again, a similar kind of thing, but this one is slightly more interesting. Which means, according to all the rabbis just quoted, that there's no reason to be machmir if there is less than a kazayit. How much can't you own? You can't own a kazayit. It's less than a kazayit. You don't have to be machmir. And earlier in this, he just quoted all these opinions that said there's no reason to be machmir. We'll skip a little bit.
Altogether
in what's considered one area. But where it's underlined, Avalahachmir bidivrei sofrim yoter mimashihmir b'shulchan aruch zu minayin lanu. But for us to have an attitude to be more stringent on a rabbinic law than on something which the Shulchan Aruch actually wrote about, why would we do this? But then he writes, "V'kol zeh lahalacha." Everything I just now said is regarding what the proper thing to do is. Aval Yisrael kedoshim heim, which means he's going to come to the same conclusion that we will end up on Pesach being incredibly machmir. But now, by the way, everything I've said till now is very dangerous because I haven't set any kind of limitations. Just every kind of craziness, and I'm sorry for using that word, because on the one hand, when do you say Yisrael kedoshim heim, and when do you say call the men in the white coats? Or when do you say, no, this is a little silly and we shouldn't be doing this? Regarding matzah, source number six. V'kol zeh b'shaita tchak, aval shelo b'shaita tchak, Yisrael kedoshim v'nogin la'achmir, afilu b'matzot shel kol yimei ha-pesach, l'shmor oto b'shaita tchina v'eilech. V'lo likach kemech min ha-shuk, afilu b'derech ha-mutar b'shaita tchak. Which means, what are you allowed to eat on Pesach? You're allowed to eat anything which is not chametz. Right? Now, that should not be all that complicated. What about matzah? Matzah should be allowed. Now, for matzah you're going to use for the mitzvah, you should take that matzah, and that should be shmura matzah. What does shmura mean? That it was guarded, A, against becoming chametz, but it's more than that. Everything was done, l'shem mitzvot matzah. All along the way, everything was done, l'shem mitzvot matzah. So the truth is that regular matzah is kosher for Pesach, and cheaper. Right? Right? It's cheaper, and it's kosher for Pesach. But what does he say over here? That certainly you can use the other matzah, because it's kosher, but again, Yisrael Kedoshim Haim, and it's better to use this, unless you're stuck. Unless you're stuck.
Are you supposed to conclude from that, that if you were already going to use the Shmura Matzah, you need it for the mitzvah of Chagiga B'Seder, and otherwise not? Or is there
a... You're correct in understanding that. Correct in understanding that. But now, till now, you can say, okay, I quoted a Rush that you're not so sure where that's coming from, and I quoted, you know, okay, it's a Hasidic Rebbe writing halacha, so how much can we trust him? Yes? Yeah. I know, there's different opinions. There's different opinions of when it has to be. A lot say, no, it's okay. Tzira doesn't make a difference, but it's at least L'shem Mitzvah. It has to be from the Shatlisha or Tchina. Mishnah Brura, source number seven, matzot mitzvah. What is the matzah that you're going to use for the mitzvah? Mashe enkin b'shar matzot ein tzarech shimur l'shem mitzvah. The Mishnah Brura writes that when do you need matzot mitzvah? When? For the matzah you're going to use for the mitzvah. So that should say matzat shmura on it. And there are those who say you're not yotzei mitzvah matzah without that. Rak shizaher shelo yobehen chashash chimutz. What's the main thing? Make sure it's not chametz. Umotar la'asot ayideim imashkiach aleim, ach Yisrael kedoshim im v'nagu la'asot shimur l'shem mitzvah b'kol ha-matzot. So again, this is the Mishnah Berurah writing. I want to be very clear over here. If you, for whatever reasons, financial or otherwise, say, I'm only going to buy Shmur Matzah for the Seder, so that's fine. That's fine. But what these sources are saying, but it's using that same term again and again and again, what is it? Yisroel Kedoshim Heim, so they're machmer on themselves. And it seems to be that by Pesach, this is not necessarily a bad thing. Similarly, in source number 8, again, it's the Mishnah Brura. Katuva achronim da'af de'bedina ein tzarech shimur l'shem matzah, rak l'mitzvot shel layla, rak l'matzot shel layla, leilot harishonot. Still living in Chutz La'aretz. This is, yes, you understood this correctly. You only need it for the Seder. Aval l'shara yamim da'i k'she'ein behem chash chametz. It's enough to know that there's no chametz in it. Yisroel kadoshim v'im v'nagu l'asot shimur l'shem matzah, b'kol ha'matzot mishat t'china, u'lefachot mishat lisha, v'ayin l'kam en simet hafsama b'meshe katav nuzeh. And he says that still, Jews have a custom of doing it l'shem mitzvah, for the sake of the mitzvah. Again, some of you point, he's not saying it, some of you point out even the time of katsira, from the time that it's cut, but certainly from the time that it's ground, the flower is ground, or from the time that it's kneaded, that he again sees this as being preferable. Source number 9, the Rashbates, Shimon ben Tzadok Duran. It's preferable to eat. I'll explain to you exactly why. At least this is the way the Vilna Gaon understood it. That he understands a hekesh, a connection between Pesach and Sukkot. On Sukkot, you know that even people like men who are obligated to eat only in the sukkah, all bread you eat has to be in the sukkah, but no one said you have to eat bread. So therefore, if someone doesn't want to go to the sukkah, wants to eat apples and yogurt and sit in the house, they are allowed to do that. The Gra understood that it's you're not obligated. It's not a mitzvah that you're chayiv to do, but if you go in the sukkah, you're mekayem a mitzvah. You fulfill a mitzvah. How can he prove that you fulfill a mitzvah? Because when you go in, what bracha do you say? So there's a bracha involved. So therefore, anytime you go in the sukkah and you eat in the sukkah, you fulfill a mitzvah. So he showed that there's a connection between Pesach and Sukkot, and he says the same thing with matzah. Torah says 7 days eat matzah. So he said that every time you eat matzah, you're fulfilling a mitzvah. It's not just that you're not eating chametz, you're fulfilling a mitzvah. So he claimed that therefore, if you're going to fulfill a mitzvah, you should do a matzah. You should eat matzah. That is matzah which is proper for a mitzvah. Therefore, he was machmir to eat shmur matzah all 7 days. But again, not because it wasn't as good or wasn't as kosher, but because he felt that this was a prerequisite to fulfilling the mitzvah of matzah. Again, when are we obligated to eat matzah? You're only obligated the first 2 nights. You're going to have a hard time on Shabbat Chol HaMoed making a motzi if you don't eat matzah, but nonetheless, you're only obligated the first 2 nights. But he said, the first night, sorry. I'm still, I got, he got to me. He got to me. The first night. No, so correct, that would be an interesting question. And no, he wouldn't, but he felt that there was a fulfillment of a mitzvah nonetheless. Source number 9, the Rashbates writes, V'kfar nahagu chumrot gudolot Yisrael kadoshim bezeh. That means when it comes to Pesach, shalosh namish b'kli chametz l'finei Pesach. I'll give you what he's talking about over here. A chumrah. Oh yeah, of course it's a chumrah. I know. Well, that's because they got to you. I'll explain the case. They got to you in this, and you say, hold it, who would ever do such a thing? Chametz before Pesach is not chametz. It's not. Well, it's more than that. It's not chametz. Chametz before Pesach is not chametz. So therefore, theoretically, if you have your favorite chulin pot, and you haven't used it in 24 hours, and you make kosher Pesach food in it, theoretically, that food is all kosher Pesach. I kept using the word theoretically there? Theoretically. Because you'll think I'm crazy. None of you are going to do that. For this reason, there are certain people who would prefer to do all their Pesach cooking and baking before Pesach, because before Pesach, anything that goes wrong, it doesn't make a difference, because it was all batel. On Pesach, chametz is not batel. So if you did it on Pesach, you have a problem, because chametz does become negligible on Pesach. So if one crumb fell into your pot on Pesach, your kosher Pesach, and one crumb falls in, the whole thing is chametz. But if one crumb fell in before Pesach, the whole thing is kosher. But I'm even going one step further and saying, so if you used your clean chametz pot, it should be okay. Nonetheless, I would suspect that none of you actually do that, because you're very machmir. and because that's the way your mothers did it, and that's the way that you've been taught, and that's what the Shulchan Aruch actually writes. But what he's saying over here, if I have a pure analysis of halacha, that should be okay, nonetheless, he says, but Jews are holy, so Jews wouldn't do such a thing. But that one you liked, because that one you do. It's only the ones that you don't do that you don't like. It's okay. We understand each other. Source 11. And this one's also good. This is the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so here, this is quite normative. How many Sephardim do we have in the audience?
Married.
So you're a Sephardi by choice.
I'm divorced from a Sephardi.
I guess that's good. I don't know.
No, I was told that I can still eat kidney.
Okay. So we will have distinctions now between Ashkenazic halacha and Sephardic halacha. So let's begin. Source 11, the Shulchan Aruch writes, this is Rav Yosef Karo, this is halacha for Sephardim, Dvash shel eino Yehudi, source 11, ein machzikim bo isur va'ochlo mato bePesach. Now what was missing over there from this Dvash? You don't notice what's missing because it doesn't sound all that surprising. Because what can be the problem with Dvash, with honey? Honey, a non-Jew sold you, is fine, you can use it on Pesach. What's the problem? Honey is honey. Again, you.
What can I say? What can I say? But you don't use anything on Pesach that doesn't have a hedge.
Really? Well, Rav Yosef Karo doesn't know that. Rav Yosef Karo doesn't know that you need a hechsher for Pesach. Continue. Hagah, this is the Ramah writing. Mihu yesh machmirim. There are those who are strict. And the custom in our countries, meaning Ashkenazim, which means what's he saying? The Mechaber started off in saying, it's something that you shouldn't suspect. What's he saying? You look at the ingredients, it's something which is fine, so it's fine. Meaning, what could be the problem with applesauce, or what could be the problem with this? And that's what he says. And the Ramah comes and says, no, we have to know that there was no possibility of any chametz being involved in the process. Which is, this may sound like a very subtle point, the distinction between the two of them. The Ramah didn't accept the Mechaber's point that if the object is an object that normally is kosher, so it's kosher for Pesach, he says, no, it needs a special hechsher for Pesach. You need to know that it didn't go through any kind of process. This, by the way, is a major difference between, again, in theory, we'll see in practice as we continue, this is going to be a major difference because, again, your attitude can be, you go to a store and you pick up a can of peaches, right? And you say, it's peaches. It's kosher all year. What could be the problem with it? And nonetheless, the Ashkenazic custom, as we're told over here, is you don't buy something. Have you ever heard that? You don't buy something for Pesach without a kosher Pesach hechsher on it. That's where it comes from. That's the Ramah. But Rav Yosef Karo did not say that. What are you trying to tell me? I was brought up eating. I remember. Okay. If you behave, I will speak about peanut oil and canola oil. If you behave, which I doubt. By the way, what's really interesting at the end of the Ramah, he writes, "Uviyom tov ha'achron ochlim perot yaveshim." So he says, but on the last day, it's okay, then you can eat it. Because the last day is Drabanan. He means the eighth day. He doesn't mean the seventh day over here. Which is similar to what some of you know about Gebruchst. Right? Chassidim get excited about Gebruchst on the last day. But that idea of the last day being more makel, that's not something, again, just it was made up after the Baal Shem Tov. Here you see him saying this thing about this chumrah regarding the things, again, with the heksher, without the heksher. Because theoretically it's fine, but here's another example of the Ramah saying that we're going to be machmer on it. Let's take a look at Rav Ovadia, source number 12. the question that he was asked, Ha'im mutar le'echol be'pesach chim'ah u'gvinah she'nesu kodem pesach v'lo hikpidu l'shomrim ba'ofen miyuchad shuk'sherin le'pesach. So what's he writing here? What's the question? Can you buy things like butter and cheese, which was bought before Pesach, and was not produced in a way that was specially formulated for Pesach? Read the words again. V'lo hikpidu l'shomram ba'ofen miyuchad shuk'sherim le'pesach. V'chein dagim miluchim v'sardinim shenasu kodem pesach. B'li hashkacha miyuchedet ha'im mutar l'chol mehem be'pesach. Can you eat all of these things on Pesach if it doesn't have a hechsher for Pesach? That's the question. What's his answer going to be? What will it be? What will it be? No.
No.
He says yes. Tshuva. Here's the answer. This is only good for Sfaradim. It's not going to work for the rest of you. No, but it's very interesting the way that he negotiates with the issues. And let's read it, because this, first of all, it's typical of Rav Avadia, and it's also the greatness of Rav Avadia. And I think you'll see it very clearly here. Tshuva. Even though a mixture of chametz on Pesach, of chametz, is even if there's a drop, which means, but if the mixture took place before Pesach, which means if something fell in before Pesach, it's fine, it is negligible on Pesach. Once it was allowed, it doesn't come back and reintroduce itself. That's choser v'nir, which means come back and wake up. But the Ashkenazim are machmir on this lechadchila of something coming back and waking up in certain examples, and I'm not getting into that today. Umitam zehitir haravad basar maliach shenimlach b'shar yemot hashana lechomim eno bePesach, and therefore the ravid allowed salted meat that was allowed for all year on Pesach. V'afal b'shabamim harbei mitarev b'melech me'at kemach, and even though it was possible or even likely that a little bit of flour may have gotten mixed with that salt that was used to salt the meat, and now all of you are saying, so it's not kosher for Pesach. You can't possibly eat this. O isa, o gargir chitim, o seirim shenitbaku, or all kinds of chametz things that could have gotten mixed up. O maliach harehu kiroteach, and when it's salted, it's as if it's cooked, because something salty is as if it's cooking together. Mikol makom harei ein behem kedei litein bo tam. It's not enough. It's negligible. It's not enough to give it a taste. V'kfar nitpatel bo biyudalid b'shir shishim. It was already negligible before Pesach started. V'kevon shenitpatel shuv einu chozav v'nir b'toch haPesach adkan. And once it was batel, it doesn't come back. I'm skipping a lot now. Amnam, he writes harama. Here's for Ashkenazim. Harama b'hagasham katav sheyesh cholkim al zeh. The Rama disagrees. That's the Rama that you've seen. V'chein ogin b'minyot Ashkenaz l'hachmir l'chilu shelo l'chol gvinot v'dagim u'basar yavesh ho'ev alo nizaru b'shat asiyatam levdok ha'melech mitarov et chametz. Because no one was careful when they were being produced to make sure that there wasn't the slightest amount of chametz. Ashkenazim are machmir in this unless you know and it has a special hechsher for Pesach. Again, it's clear the Rama was not talking that it had to have an OU stamped on it or a badat stamped on it, but that's what he's talking about. It needs to be prepared for Pesach. Don't go into Sfaradikom. Stop. Let me read first. We'll see. Vihine, questions like this will depend on the individual, on very individual things. Okay? I don't want to, right now, generally speak about it. Vihine achenu ha'ashkenazim, which is nice. Nahagu lahachmir b'kol zeh k'divrei harama hanal. Shelo lechol basar v'dagim v'gvina k'shelo nezeru l'shomram ba'ofim yuchad shiukshirin lepesach. Ashkenazim won't eat it unless it has a special hechsher. V'gami b'nei edot ha-mizrach, and even among Sfaradim, yesh chasidim v'anshei ma'aseh ha-machmir ma'atzman b'kol zeh. There are lots of Sfaradim that won't eat anything unless it has a hechsher for Pesach. V'Yisrael k'doshim kiblu al'atzman chumrot rabot b'pesach mishum ha-chumrot ha-isur shel chametz. There are lots of Jews who have a holy attitude towards Pesach and take special chumrot, stringencies upon them, and they won't eat things because of chametz. Ulam, nonetheless, harav hamore hora'a lirabim, a rabbi who is going to instruct the masses, a community, tzorich laharot kedat maran, must rule according to the Shulchan Aruch, to Rav Yosef Karo, shekibalnu hora'atav bein lahakel bein lahachmir. that we accept his position whether he's strict or whether he is lenient. Even though an individual is allowed to be as machmir as they want on Pesach, you know, kitavat nafsho, as much as to his heart's desire. Et tznuim chachma lahachmir rak bibeito uvchomotav. The person who wants to be machmir, he says, do it in your own home behind closed windows. V'kol ma sheyuchal lehitchamek milagalot misterav levnei adam. And he must do all that he can to conceal his chumrot from other people. V'tamid chacham shegila ra yordeya. Yora al pi hadin dafka, and any Talmud Chacham who rules must rule according to the Shulchan Aruch, which is makel on this. So he says all Sfardi rabbis have to get up and rule that you can eat something without a hechsher for Pesach, because that's the halacha for Sfardim. You want to be machmir for yourself, great. Don't tell anybody that you're being machmir. And let me continue a little bit because it's interesting. No. He continues and he says, "Shadayan Omar et Tzedek Einu Rishayla wrote Negedat Maran Shekibal Nohoratav, and any Sephardic Rav is not permitted to rule against Rav Yosef Karo. V'amnam Harav Agon El Kalai B'Seif Ezekron Avram Kotzav Anu Nogin Lachmir Kedat Ramah B'Din Chozav Anir B'Mashu." He says, "No, the truth is that there are Sephardic opinions that say that we agree with the Ramah that not even to have a drop in it and not to use that chametz pot before Pesach that drop could Chozav Anir come back and wake up." And he writes, so far that we're machmir on laws of Pesach, we are Ashkenazim when it comes to Pesach. He's quoting Harav Alkalai b'zeh. Kach amarli Harav Hagon Atarmi Mar Rabbi Adkan. V'nimshach Harav Harav Rav Yaakov Sofer b'Kaf Achayim, which is a major Sfardi halacha book, which is essentially like the Sfardi Mishnah Berurah it's called the Kaf Achayim, and he writes this as well, that Sfardim should be machmir. This is typical Rav Ovadia. Rav Ovadia said that Sfardic halacha is whatever Maran said, and lots of chumrot came in, and he cut them all. He cut bein lekula, bein lechumra. He got rid of everything else, and he said, we need to follow Rav Yosef Karo. And he said, anybody who disagrees with me is not saying the right thing. It is not a responsible Sfardi posek. Ulam be'emet she'ikar kedat Maran achida b'machzik b'rcha. Now, she'gam b'dinei Pesach ein harav mor reshay la'rot l'achirim el al pi adin dafka. V'zeo kedat Maran ha'shulchan aruch she'kibalnu horotav. He can only rule like the Shulchan Aruch. V'chen katav v'gom harav antebi b'sefer chachma u'musar. She'yoter tov shelo l'nhog k'sfara mi sha'o mechoz v'nir b'pesach. Even though there's those who say we really shouldn't be lenient like this. Ela kedat Maran ha'shulchan aruch she'pasak einu choz v'nir. When it comes to things like this to be machmir, what does Rav Ovadia say? Don't be such a big tzaddik. And again, he's quoting, be machmir for yourself, but when you give rulings, be lenient. Somebody who understands. They're saying it's okay. But he doesn't want... He says that Rav Yosef Karo's psak is right, and we should be following it. Not we. They should be following it. Now, this is very interesting. He's quoting the Rush. You know why it's a little unfair? Remember where we started today? We started with the Rush. Remember what the Rush said? The Rush said you should be very machmir when it comes to Pesach. But he quotes a Rush that tells you not to be machmir. So I'm just saying that's maybe... a little unfair. V'ayin lahara shekatav sha'anu ein lanu lachmir elama shemotzim b'shas. The Rush writes, we should only be machmir on that which we find in the Gemara. Although, to be fair to the Rush, I believe he quoted the Yerushalmi at the end. He said that there could be support from the Yerushalmi. But nonetheless, v'im adam chashuv mirov anvanato upirushato einu retzel l'smoch al atzmo l'asot maaseh l'hakel. And if somebody is very modest and doesn't want to be lenient, yinhog midat prishato la'atzmo, by yourself, be stringent, avalo nitain lichatev basefer, lorot bol chumra ledorot habayim. You're not allowed to write stringencies for the next generation. You want to be machmir by yourself, but don't let other people see your chumrot. V'kol shkein shelo yira adam lachmir la'acharim midato im lo shiavi ra'ayot berot minashas. And the only way that you can possibly be machmir is if you can prove a reason for your stringency from the Gemara itself. Let's finish up what he writes, because this is very interesting. This is when you all become rabbis. This is a very important thing to know, and they should teach all rabbis the following sentence, and you may want to take this and show this to your rabbis. V'ayin b'tshuva mi'ahava Chelek Aleph, Simen Kuf Pei Aleph, Shekatav, Misha Shagag Vahora La Asur La Achirim Shalokidin. Somebody made a mistake and told somebody that they can't do something in a way that they were wrong, which is really allowed to do it. Chamor Onsho, his punishment is more difficult, Mimisha Shagag Vahora La Hakel Shalokidin, than somebody who was Makel in a way which is illegitimate. Why? Shacharon Chato Bin Adam Lamakom. If you told somebody they can do something which they couldn't do, you were too makil, so you sinned against God. Vishavra pedlo, and you can do tshuva. Aval harishon chata b'chet shebein adam l'chavero. The first, when you were too machmir, you sinned against your fellow man. Shafilu yom kippurim eino machaper. And even Yom Kippur won't bring you forgiveness. Isn't that great? So what he says is that, you're gonna, that it's better for a rabbi to be too makil than to be too machmir. He quotes it again. This is the context, but he's quoting everything. Look, obviously, Rav Avadia knew that there were lots of Sfaradim that felt a little funny with the psak of the Mechaber, because the Mechaber is very lenient over here. This was the one thing that all of you weren't going to fight with me about when I told you you need a hechsher for Pesach on things. And lo and behold, what do we find? Rav Yosef Karo says you don't need a hechsher for Pesach. All that it has to be kosher. You don't need to go and check the whole lineage of that particular fruit or honey or raisin. Looks kosher. It's kosher. And the Rama says, no, we need to know where it came from, and we're strict on this. And Rav Avadia insists, and I would bet that Rav Avadia himself was machmir on this, is machmir on this. I mean, that's my sense of what he's writing. But what does he say? He says, that's not the halacha. And don't go and tell people chumrah. Somebody understands and they're sensitive. They can be strict on themselves, but don't tell people the wrong thing. And in this context, he comes and says that as a rabbi, it's better to be too lenient than to be too strict. Which again is count. I mean, if you're too lenient, no one's going to respect you.
Okay. I'd like to use the analogy of the rabbi who says the chicken is kosher for a poor man but not for a rich man when there's a question. Uh-huh. Right? In this particular case, is there any kind of, I have to be careful about how I said, sociological explanation? Mm-hmm. Because he's writing at a time for a Sephardi population who has a sociological, economic, or whatever problem.
It's a good point, but I don't think it's the case over here, because this is typical Rav Avadia approach. Whatever Rav Yosef Karo wrote, we need to accept it. This is very, very typical, and it's both lenient and strict. It's what Rav Yosef Karo said, and that was part of what his whole war has been, to get all Sfaradim to line up. Rav Yosef Karo, now what's the problem? Not all Sfaradim traditionally followed the Psak of Rav Yosef Karo. Not everybody accepted it. There are whole communities and whole countries that never accepted it, and he says, you're all wrong, you need to accept it. So that's where the, right? I'm right on this? This whole section of it. Okay, let's touch kitniot for a little bit, because kitniot is something which all of you love and respect.
And derivatives.
You can't speak anymore. You're a Sfaradi now. Now I know where all this comes from. Look at source 13. This is the Shari Tshuva. Shari Tshuva is one of the commentaries on the pages of the Shulchan Aruch. It's in the Mishnah Berurah as well. V'ayim b'lakuti maharil. Acher shevia minhag of kitniot, shakatav ha'ochlim b'pesach over beloved lo tasur, whoever eats kitniot in Pesach goes against the prohibition of the Torah not to follow the rules of the chachamim, v'kol over divrei chachamim chayev mita, and whoever goes against the rules of the rabbis is punishable by death, ayin sham. Which obviously he's telling you, don't be so strict to get rid of kitniot. V'mokom acher amdu k'tzat mi'chachamim sheratzu lefrotz b'zeh, and there were other rabbis who wanted to break this. V'lo alta b'yadam lefi shechachmei hador migudlei Ashkenaz chardu lekratam v'amdu b'feretz v'kaimu divrei chachamim v'hichlitu ha'yisur b'medinot eilu v'ein lemod b'mekomot shenogin heter mi'az umikodem shelo nitpashta b'neihim gzeirot ha'gdolot v'hatkanatam, and so on. What he's telling you, he says, now this is an ancient Ashkenaz custom, and we have no permission to go against it. By the way, in the next line, he writes, for so-and-so, shegodol echad hoya machmir afilu b'kafe, that he thought that coffee was kitniot. By the way, those who discuss coffee, also chocolate.
Then we clearly have nothing to do with it.
the trick is on Pesach to stay fleishig. It's not a problem. That's right. He writes, just one second, he writes a little bit further down, Uva Makamot Elu Nohagin Heter Pashut Bikafe. And certainly people allow cafe in work. Certainly if it has a hechsher, so then we can rely on the cafe. And I just wanted you to see that in terms of the okay, let's get to Rav Moshe. Yes. There's many problems with kitniyot. One problem is, why was it not allowed in the first place, which is not so simple. And the second problem with kitniyot is, what exactly is kitniyot and how wide it goes. So let me, we will read, what?
String beans.
We will read our kitniyot. We will read what Rav Moshe says about kitniyot. But first, something like quinoa, is that kitniyot or is not? So we will get to this in a second, and we will get to lecithin, which is rapeseed, which then they called grapeseed because rapeseed did not sound all that good, and that's canola. We'll come. What? Okay. No. So those things I will speak about, but first let's see what Rav Moshe says, and then we'll see how all this applies. What's the question? Source 15. This is from 1966. B'inyan peanut. Regarding peanuts. Source 15. This is written from Rav Yaakov Goldman. Hinei b'dvar ha-peanut, regarding peanuts, shekatavti. Yes, you see peanuts? No. Shebeharbe mekomot achlu otam b'pesach, many places they ate it. Uchvodo, the rabbi who's writing me, tama b'tam hadavar, the guy who wrote him wants to, this Rabbi Goldman wants to know, why was it allowed? Mishum sheshama, he heard that she'osim imenu be'ezem makom gam kemach, people could make peanut flour, which whatever. V'gam shama sheniz ra'in b'sadot kishar kinyot, and he understands that it grows like other kinyot, so why should this be allowed? So Rav Moshe is not particularly fond of the question even, and he writes, Aval yada kvodo she'en ze inyan klal. But the guy even writing me knows that it's ridiculous what he's saying. Shekoldrim osim ehem kemach ne'esum min hagzeh. I mean, do we say that everything that can be made into flour is not allowed because of kitniyot? De'en lecha devar ha'osim imenu kemach ketapuche adoma lo rak midinot zu elagam b'yirop b'mokmotenu v'gam b'dorot hakodmin molon lo chashu li'isur zeh. Everyone knows that you can make flour out of potatoes, and no one ever said it wasn't allowed. By the way, that's not true. In source 16, you'll keep your finger there, go 16 for a second. Rav Menashe Klein is quoting some of the here. V'hivi b'shem yad aron sof simetet zayin shebitzat makom ba'ashkenaz lo achlu tapuchei adama b'pesach. There were places that weren't. The joke about this is that meat. Meat and matzah. The joke about this is they claim that the Chai Adam wanted to write against eating potatoes because you can make potato flour, and someone responded, if he would have done it, they would have called his book, instead of Chai Adam, Mitat Adam, because he would have killed everyone that was left. But Rav Moshe over here says no one ever said, but it just goes to show you, I mean, I don't mean this to belittle Rav Moshe Chas V'Shalom, just because Rav Moshe, he's saying nobody responsible. And again, I don't mean to belittle the person who said it. That when it comes to Pesach, you do have people looking for every single thing that you can do. Why? Yisrael Kedoshim Heim. Okay, good. Let's continue. He says, no one ever said this. No one ever worried about this. Continue in the next paragraph, one line before it's underlined. Umikom akom lo asarum kimforish barama v'chardal mustard, katava ramabi, simintav samach dalid, shenohagin la asur, dahavi kimine kitniot, afshe ein bo ta'amim. Which means, he says, this is very interesting because he says that mustard really doesn't fit into the criteria of kitniot, but people customary don't do it. Which means, here you just took the custom of kitniot and spread it. Rabbi Blumenkranz had this wonderful book come out every year on Pesach. Now, you can't make fun of that book now. And he wrote all kinds of things in the book where he was very, very machmir. Most of the book was a list of medicines which were good or not good, and I can tell you right now that according to his Rebbe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, according to Rabbi Soloveitchik, according to the Chazon Ish, okay, we're not talking about just modern Orthodox rabbis, that if something's not edible, then it's not food. If it's not food, you don't have to worry. There's a whole book there, people searching through what you can take, but it's not... But, just 1 second, but the Chazon Ish would say, if you can get something, which doesn't have chametz, it's better. But still, it's not food. If you have a medicine, you have your pill that you have to take, a pill is not food.
No, you just swallow.
I know this. It's not, yes, it's not food. And being that it's not food, it's not a problem on Pesach. But it's not chametz. It's not food. It's not edible, yeah. Depends. What are you looking for? What? But what are you looking for? What kind of things? Which means when most of his book is about toiletries and about things that aren't chametz in the first place, and he updates it every year and tells you. I mean, he passed away. He passed away already 2 years ago. Because people are obsessive and people are holy. Yeah, but you don't. But my point is that you don't need it in the my point is you don't need it in the drugstore, because these things are not chametz to begin with. But there was one particularly delicious comment that he had. Now, chardal mustard, we see is not really kidney or machmir not to use it. Someone made.
Why you could never find kosher lefesach mustard.
Now you know what. So now you know why. The Ramah says we don't need it because we treat it like kidneyot. In his around 4 years ago or so, someone came out with kosher Pesach mustard, which was like this yellow thing that looked disgusting, and I couldn't imagine anybody buying it till I found it in my house. and it lasted till next Pesach when we threw it away erev Pesach the next year.
We tried.
And I mean, it would have gone great on that hot dog on matzah, I guess. I don't know. But he wrote there not to buy it because it says mustard on it, and that's very confusing. Excuse me. By that matter, you shouldn't buy chometz either because it sounds like chametz. And you should. I mean, again, to me, that was just going, even if I want to respect and say Yisrael Kedoshim, it just seemed to me to be a little bit far. He says religious Jews should stay away from this, which, by the way, was wonderful because it was the complete opposite attitude of Rav Avadya. Rav Avadya said you don't need a heksher on something, it just has to be kosher. And he's saying something's kosher, but don't eat it, even though it's a heksher, because you want to be because it doesn't sound right. So it's just very interesting when you compare the different approaches. No. I know, but mustard. Because it says mustard on it. It says kosher Pesach mustard. Someone can get confused. But it's kosher Pesach. So don't say anything. Don't say anything. Let's continue. They do. No. They have kosher. They have kosher Pesach mustard. Sfaradim do. She's Sfaradi. Okay. Let me continue. Dehavei. Okay. L'chein ein lanu. Listen to Rav Moshe here. Where the l'chein ein lanu b'davar ella mashe mefurash nagula asur. The only things that we treat as kidneyot are things that were specified as not being allowed. V'chein mashe yidu mefursam, and that which is known and well known and publicized. V'gam yesh li ten tam de din mashe ne'esar b'minhag. This law of kidneyot, there was never an official group of rabbis who made a law. Elo shenhigu et ha'am lachmir. They told them to be machmir. Shelo lecho minim elu. Shoyomatsui lochlam ebnei ha'tamim dechshash minei dagan. Shenit arvu. And again, he gives a specific concern about kidneyot, that we're worried, these were things we're worried that flour may have gotten mixed in on this. So therefore, he says to stay away from it, including the rice. Even the Sfaradim, we eat rice, are very careful to check every single grain and to have special kosher Pesach rice, and not all Sfaradim. Right. And things that you can make flour out of. The only things prohibited are the things specifically that the rabbis back then included, and not other things. Things that they didn't know about, they certainly didn't prohibit. Therefore, tapuche adama shelo hayu mitzuin az. Potatoes were not in Europe at that point. They came from the New World. Kiyadua, as is well known, velo nhigu b'meila la'osram enum bichlal ha'isur. Therefore, they're not included in the prohibition. By the way, my big question on this would be corn. Corn, I would assume, didn't make it to the New World, to the Old World either, till relatively late. So I don't know why the distinction according to Rav Moshe would exist. Again, skip to where it's underlined. When potato did become well known, they didn't want to say it's not a ulai b'nei atzorech. Now you're going to the sociological question. Maybe because it was necessary. Ulai b'nei shatamim klushim. But maybe because the whole idea of kitniot is somewhat weak. Therefore, he says there was no that when potatoes were introduced, nobody went and spread the isur. L'chein, skip towards the bottom of the page. Chachmei hadorot ha'achronim lo ratzu lahosif la'asur od haminim shiyit tosvu acharkach. Rabbis don't want to, and what he's saying shouldn't, add new prohibitions and say, we discovered a new kitniot strain. Rak she'i efshar la'atir ma shekvar nahagu la'isur. He says we can't allow what was already prohibited, but don't go and prohibit things which are allowed at this point. Let's get to his conclusion. L'chein gam ha'pinats lo asru b'harbe makamot od k'mach shekatav u'b'makom sheleika minhag, any place where there's no custom, ein la'asur k'dvarim ke'elu ein la'achmir. One should not be machmir in such things, and you shouldn't disallow it. The very conclusion of a suffix in la. So also, when one is in doubt, it's not even a suffix of the Torah. It's not a suffix drabanan. It's a suffix regarding a custom. One should not be machmir. L'chein u'l'chein shayach sheitein hechsher. One can give a hechsher shelo natarev sham chametz. That one's careful. Chametz didn't make it there. V'yachlu elu shelo nagu b'zeh isur. And anybody who never had a custom not to allow it can allow it. V'chein re'iti shenotnim hechsher al peanut oil. And therefore, one's allowed to give a hechsher to peanut oil for this reason. Let's say that again. What Rav Moshe is saying over here is that kitniot is an old Ashkenazic custom, but it should not necessarily include anything new, only things that were included in the custom. And therefore, when a new thing was found, like potato, and you can make potato flour, one of the reasons for kitniot is you can get confused between flour to flour. You can make potato flour. He says it makes no difference because this was not included in the Isur, and we should not be jumping, including new things in it. Therefore, quinoa, which is maybe kitniot according to a classic definition, maybe, there is no reason to aser it. It would be allowed. The only thing that I would say is Ashkenazim should have a hechsher on it. Okay? Peanuts, if your custom was never not to have it, then peanuts would be allowed. Yes? I said I don't know why corn should be the same thing. I don't know why it would have been different. It could very well be. Logically, everything he said here about potatoes should apply to corn. Maybe I'm missing something. Now, one more second. Regarding canola, which is Canadian oil, the C in canola.
Rapeseed.
What is rapeseed or grapeseed? I mean, I'm telling you, they changed it because of the connotation. What was it used for historically? They found it was a wonderful plant which could relieve a wheat field when you want to give the field a year off from wheat. That was one of the major usages of it. They find it's a relatively healthy oil, and therefore it's used in all kinds of things. Now, the problem, therefore, is that it's grown in wheat fields. So I will tell you right now, according to the same logic of Rav Moshe, you should be able to use it, but I would want to see a hechsher on it for Pesach to know that. Because I'm over here, I'm concerned that there's real chametz involved in it. I would not, I discussed this with a very well-known rabbi, very well-known, who gives a hechsher for it, and I asked him, how do you separate from the wheat grain? He had no idea what I was talking about. And he said to me, he said, he doesn't micromanage. He says, I have somebody else who deals with this. I'm sure he knows. If you want, you could talk to him. But I was just a little taken aback that he didn't even know this point. Yeah. As far as I know, it's not. As far as I know, it's not. And this would be such a simple thing. Somebody just has to start growing without a separate field. You should therefore theoretically be able to have a mahadrin, oil over here, and it's much healthier than the others. But this is one of these things. Theoretically, I think it's fine. But when it comes to practice, I just want to see a proper hechsher on it. On the other hand, I'm not naive, and I know that a hechsher on it. On the other hand, I'm not naive. On the other hand, I'm not naive, and I really suspect that because someone's going to imagine it's something like Pesach, it's something like kidney, that no one's going to give a hechsher on it. So it could be that. So it should be the same. Excuse me?
The hechsherim on these things say it's kosher for Pesach.
Some things now say kosher la ochlet lecithin. Lecithin is made out of canola. It's made out of this. This is what it means. If something says on kosher ochle lecithin, I think it's okay to eat for Ashkenazim. Okay? Yeah, but I don't think that they're responsible, and I don't think that they know what they're saying. The rabbis that I saw doing this, some of them are conservative, and there's a whole tshuva there. The conservative movement is trying to allow it. The others are claiming something which I don't think they can prove. They're saying, we want to return to Minhag Eretz Yisrael. And Minhag Eretz Yisrael, authentic from 2,000 years ago, didn't have kidney yet, so now we're back in Israel. We want to go back to our old Mishnah. I think it's either very naive or worse. Can I read one more source for you today? You'll like this. One more source. We started late. We're going to end late. I'm sorry. One more source. This is the writings of Rav Nachman from Breslov as recorded by his student, Rabbi Natan. Source 17. We'll start from the second paragraph, but read the first one when you have time. V'gam be'inyin ha'chumrot yiterot be'pesach. Regarding extreme stringencies on Pesach. Lo haya maskim klal al hamarbim ledakdek yoter midai. He was not at all, Rav Nachman was not, he liked happiness and joy. He was not at all in favor of people being too machmir. V'nichnasim b'marash charot gedolot. And getting depressed. He saw people getting depressed because of this. V'erich b'sichazu az ki ish achad mi'anshenu, one of our people, sha'al lo, Zichrono levracha, she'ela achat, be'inyan eza chumra be'pesach eich lehitnaheg. And one of the fellows who was a follower of Nachman asked him, which chumrot should we be doing? Va'az hitlo tzeitz mimenu ma'od. He made fun of him. He didn't hold from this Yisrael kedoshim. V'hirbele daber me'inyan ze she'ein tzrichin lechapes achar chumrot yiterot. V'shiga'on ubilbulim. Should I translate? That one need not go search for chumrot, excessive chumrot, craziness and confusion. The Amar Shehuba Atzmo Gamkein Kfar Hayashakuba Inin Zemaod, he also got involved in this. Shehyo Olimal Da'ato Chumrot Yiterot Ma'od Ma'od. He kept on thinking of more and more Chumrot that he can come up with. Upamachar Hayachoshev Machshavot Be'inyan Hamayim Al Pesach. And once he thought about the water from Pesach, Shechashash Shamayesh Ezamashu B'mayim Sheshovim. Maybe there's something in the water. Maybe you should prepare all his water before Pesach. It's batel then. Gamze lohutav beinav. He didn't like the kikashel lishmar hitev b'mayim. Be'er Pesach al kol yemei Pesach. V'lohutav beinav shum mayim rak mi ma'ayan hanovim v'yotzim v'olchim b'mayim mina chadashim b'chol eitz. So again, think how to solve the water problem. Aval b'makom shehu zechron levracha haya yoshev lo yashum ma'ayan kazeh. And again, he got into this whole thing about water, where again, I need it from a flowing stream. I don't have a flowing stream. Maybe I'll go away for Pesach. I'll sit near a stream so I can have water that I can use, because maybe something fell in the water in the well. He got so involved in the chumrot, and he got so depressed. And all these stringencies. He stopped. He made fun of this. Afilu b'Pesach, one should go We shouldn't follow all kinds of mechorot on Pesach. V'hirich b'sichazu harbe az ki ikar avada be'emet hu tmimut hu pshitut larbot b'torah v'tifilah masim tovim b'lilach hapes l'chadesh dafka chumrot yiterot. The main thing is to be a good Jew and to daven and don't go looking for chumrot. Rak leilech b'derech avotenu hakidmamin, follow our ancestors. V'lonat na'a torah l'malchei asharet, God give the Torah to angels. V'ma'az shebishvil ze azvu ha'olam chachmot hadiktuk ve'enu oskim bo klal. We keep on reading over here. And he says at the end, Rakim Yachol, Yachol, if whatever you can do, you do. V'imlav, you can't. Anasachona patre, God knows that we're human. V'kramar ezop makom acher, and I re-explained it someplace else. Which means Rav Nachman says, I used to follow all the minhagim, I drove myself crazy. It's not very healthy psychologically. For us... No, but I thought you'd find it interesting. Generally on Pesach, you need to know the difference between what a Torah law is, what a rabbinic law is, what a minhag is, and what a chumrah is. If something is only a chumrah, just one more second, and I say this even though I'm going to regret saying this, if something is a chumrah, but is not your minhag, only do that chumrah if you feel that chumrah would bring you closer to God. If you feel this chumrah is going to make you depressed and drive you crazy, do not do that chumrah. If it's your custom, so then we need to check if this is a bona fide custom, a minhag, or as a lot of sources, which I didn't, but I cut out and show you today, the opposite of a real custom, a real minhag, is you invert the letters, and then you get gehinam. To be continued.